in the school. I was raised at the school for the blind in Jacksonville.
The first thing Mbana Kantako does when I arrive at his home on the north end of Springfield is give me a tour. His blindness doesn't seem to be an impediment, as he points out the many pictures of his family and various documents on the walls. Also there, a federal order telling him to cease broadcasting, and articles about his activism. There are shelves of CDs and radio equipment in a room that looks like an old-fashioned parlor. This is where Kantako broadcasts human rights radio, illegally.
5 days before we complete our 25th year up in this crime in progress called Springfield, Illinois, and we got to say welcome to another edition of Notes on the Devil's News. A couple things you got to remember when you listen to Notes on the Devil's News. Number one, we did not call this garbage news. And number two, we did not call this garbage. These devils, your friends, do be calling news true. Now,
what we will posters do, hanging pay tribute to others who spoke out, Malcolm X and Bob Marley. Kantako says he keeps the walls like a living museum because it makes it easier to explain his roots and his life's work to people who come over. Kantako's home is old. In fact, it's a historical landmark. He lives here with his wife of 35 years. They have 3 grown children and several grandchildren. Life wasn't always this comfortable, though. Kantako, whose birth name was Dwayne Redis, his adopted name translating to resisting warrior, was born in Memphis. His family moved to central Illinois when he was young. As a young man, he lived in the John Hay Homes, a low-income housing development on the east side of Springfield where the majority of people crammed into the tiny living quarters were black.
When I moved into the project, I started doing DJing, you know, so I got to know a lot of people over there in the project. Well, I knew a lot anyway, but you know, you just got in a lot more places when you was doing stuff like that.
Kantako admits he wasn't a born activist. In his younger days, he was unemployed. He made some money DJing parties and says he hustled the streets and was into drinking and drugs. In the 80s, Kantako got involved in a voting rights lawsuit in Springfield. The law firm leading the effort recruited him and others from the east side.
They needed characters. They didn't want to look like a bunch of rich white guys fighting against a bunch of rich white guys. They had to have black people involved, right?
Kantako says he soon realized that there needed to be a group of Eastside residents looking out for each other, and so he helped form the John Hay Tenants' Rights Association. Mike Townsend is a retired social work professor who taught at the U of I Springfield and the previous Sangamon State University. He often conducted classes and helped organize events on the east side of town. He says he was impressed by Kantako's intellect.
I actually tried to get him involved in reviving a, I guess what you would call an underground newspaper that my classes used to put out. He, being blind, said he wasn't into print that much, but would be interested in doing a radio station. And he said, well, he had a friend that knew that you could get a transmitter out in California someplace.
So they ordered a transmitter from California, and Kantako's friend helped him set it up.
The signal went out about 2 blocks. But since this was in the John Hay Homes, you had 3,000 people living within 2 blocks.
Kantako says the radio channel, originally called WTRA to stand for the Tenants' Rights Association, became a part of organizing efforts.
See, the radio was a part of a whole community type thing. We was doing a after school program, a summer program for kids. You know, we had adult programs, you know, on different things. And so the radio really grew out of that whole collection of things that we were doing.
Kantako received money from supporters. That included the Catholic Church. And over the years, he has gotten press from a variety of media outlets from across the world, including National Public Radio. A story NPR aired about Kantako years ago featured this segment from his radio programming.
Apparently, the hostage drama here in Springfield is at an end. There's be a couple of hundred people out in the area. Another siren's coming in the area now. Which is a police. Got an ambulance leaving the scene, headed westbound now, on Laurel.
It's from 1989, when a man took his family hostage in his home on the east side of town after a domestic dispute. It ended with the man being shot by police. Kantako went to the scene and covered the event. He had the tape on the air shortly after the shooting. Kantako has long focused on authority figures. He interviewed Eastside residents who claimed to have been beaten by security guards and police, and he would keep close tabs on police scanners, sometimes broadcasting them on air. It was all, and still is, very much illegal. But Kantako has never paid any fines handed down from the Federal Communications Commission. His equipment has been confiscated, but he was never deterred. His broadcasts carry only a short distance, mostly the north side of Springfield, and show up at 105.9 on the dial. Kentaco has become somewhat of a legend in a world where social activism and radio waves merge. He is considered a pioneer in micro radio, which are low-powered stations that focus on communities. Kentaco explains his role as he points to a green shirt he is wearing with his own face on it.
What we've done is we've really, it's an international thing. You know, you look at this T-shirt here. This comes from a little group of white kids in Copenhagen, Denmark. They did a CD, and they did a song about our work on that CD and a couple other songs. And so that's how far the conversation has reached. Folks from all over the world that wrote us starting up stations and stuff like this.
Because you know what? Had it been up to these monsters, had they had their way, you would not be here right now. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah, because you look at it, man. Only reason they even made the treaties with the native folk, because they wasn't planning on them people being around to collect nothing, man. And when they start talking that stuff about you going to get free from the Civil War, they wasn't planning on you being around.
And as this clip from around Thanksgiving this year shows, Kentaco hasn't shied away from radical content over the years. He airs conversations with black scholars and activists. And his daily mainstream news roundup, which this clip is from, is called Notes on the Devil's News. Kentaco tells me he doesn't care what the naysayers think, that there are plenty of other radio stations for them. There's been speculation that the FCC has been easy on Kentaco, that there's a risk of making him a sort of martyr. He hasn't served jail time because of Human Rights Radio, but says he's not afraid to do so. An FCC spokesman says multiple actions have been taken against Kentaco's broadcasting. The most recent notice was issued last year. Paul Reismandel works at Northwestern University in Evanston, where he's an advisor for the college's radio station. He also writes about radio. He says regardless of what the FCC does, Kentaco's mark has already been made.
Mbana Kentaco's lasting legacy is really an inspiration for people who would use radio for social justice, and in particular using radio as a way to communicate to communities and to people who are not served well by the mainstream media and dominant commercial media institutions.
And what about the future? Will Human Rights Radio be around for another 25 years? Kentaco says yes.
You know, I think until things change around, I think there's going to have to be another 25 after that, probably, you know. But going forward, we see our role as just being a part of maintaining this and hopefully inspiring some others to be unafraid to try it.
But I can tell you that if you hang in there and you don't let folks get you down, because one of the things I know folks like to get you down, man, when they see you.
I'm Rachel Otwell.
Mbana Kentaco also has a live stream and archives on the web at humanrightsradio.net.
Facebook has had complaints about its privacy policy. Who can see your pictures? What personal data that apps can collect?
There's too many complex issues that need to be figured out. And actually, I just don't have enough time to go through everything to try and understand it all.
And Facebook privacy rules are about to change again. That story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine. It's 12:48. The widower of an Indian woman who died in an Irish hospital after being refused an abortion plans to sue Ireland's government in the European Court of Human Rights. Praveen Halappanavar confirmed his decision today through his lawyer, Gerard O'Donnell. His wife, Savita, died October 28th in a hospital in Galway in Western Ireland, 1 week after being admitted for severe pain amid a miscarriage. Doctors refused to perform an abortion for 3 days while the 17-week-old fetus still had a heartbeat. Savita fell gravely ill after the dead fetus was removed and then suffered gradual organ failure. A coroner ruled she died from blood poisoning. This case has forced Ireland to re-examine its two-decade failure to pass any laws governing when or whether women can receive abortions to save their own lives.
WILL programs are made possible by Bavir Cafe. Bavir Cafe offers specialty coffee and breakfast, featuring a choice of cold and hot breakfast items Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Bavir Cafe is staffed and managed by students. Bavir Hall, corner of Gregory and Goodwin, Urbana.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 29th of November, 2012. It's the birthday of novelist Madeline L'Engle, born in New York City in 1918. She was an actor, she wrote a novel, and then while she was in her 30s, she read a book that deeply affected her, a book of Einstein's, in which he said that anyone who's not lost in rapturous awe at the power and glory of the mind behind the universe is as good as a burnt-out candle. So she started reading about theoretical physics, and she wrote a science fiction novel for young adults, which was rejected by 26 publishers, some because they thought it was too hard for children. Others thought that a science fiction novel should not have a female as a main character. So she gave up on the book until one of her mother's old friends came to a tea party and told Madeline L'Engle that she was in a writing group with John Ferrer of the publishing house Ferrer Strauss and Giroux. And he looked at the manuscript, decided to publish it, and her book, A Wrinkle in Time, came out in 1963, won the Newbery Medal, and has gone on to sell more than 10 million copies. It's the birthday of C.S. Lewis, Clive Staples Lewis, born in Belfast, 1898, grew up in a house full of books, got a scholarship to Oxford, and though he did not like England and thought that English accents sounded strange, he did love it at Oxford and taught there for nearly 30 years. He had been an atheist, but his friend J.R.R. Tolkien, who also taught at Oxford, helped convince him to embrace Christianity. And C.S. Lewis went on to write books, classics of Christian apologetics, including the Screwtape Letters, Mere Christianity, and also his fantasy series, The Chronicles of Narnia. And it's the birthday of Louisa May Alcott, born Germantown, Pennsylvania, 1832, grew up in Concord, family was friends with Emerson and Hawthorne and Thoreau. Her father, Bronson Alcott, was an idealist, a vegan, started experimental schools that quickly failed. The family never had enough money. Louisa became a nurse in Washington during the Civil War. She contracted typhoid pneumonia, came back to Concord. And though she preferred writing lurid and sensationalist potboiler novels, to support her family, she set out to write a book for girls. She wrote Little Women. It came out in 1868, was an immediate hit, and her family was able to live comfortably from then on. Here's a poem for today by Pat Mara, entitled Teenagers. One day they decide to